And this is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Julia Kumari-Drapkin, who is lead producer for IC Change, a public media experiment in community environmental science reporting at our sister station, KVNF Public Radio in Colorado, that joined us many times during our leading up to the election. And she produced a piece called The CO2 in CO. And for This American Life, really an interesting piece about the Colorado State climatologist's complicated relationship with climate change and what happens with our view of climate change when it comes to our own backyards, stuff we wrestle with, whether it's in Baltimore or Boulder or beyond. And Julia, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let me just start by, we're going to play a clip from your piece and then jump into a conversation. This is near the opening of your piece, and then we'll jump into talking about what this means. Let's play this piece.
Before I get to Nolan, a word about just how weird the weather was here last year. I moved to the state in April, and at first, the stuff I was hearing about was kind of subtle. One woman started noticing squirrel roadkill near her house, for example.
Three roadkill squirrels. And I can't say that I've ever remember seeing a squirrel on our mesa.
The short winter meant squirrels were reproducing in greater numbers, spreading out to places they'd never been before. Flowers bloomed weeks earlier than normal, way before farmers markets even opened for the season. So people who sell flowers for a living had no place to sell. That's because spring came early, throwing the entire agricultural growing season, pollination, all out of whack. March, usually Colorado's snowiest month, had brought the lowest recorded snowfall in history. And in Colorado, snow equals water supply. By the end of May, things were starting to feel dire. That's rancher Marla Bear Bishop freaking out when she sees her stunted hay field.
I know it looks right to me. It's not right. Nothing about this is right.
Her hay field, it's alfalfa, is water-starved. The plants should be 6 inches taller than they are right now. If they don't grow, she's got no feed for her animals.
And Julia, we'll just play another piece in a minute from your story, but one of the things that two things are grabbing about your story, I'd like you to kind of talk about them both. But first, I mean, what was it that drew you to the story? What are you trying to do with this story?
It's what I was trying to do all year with the project. We were trying to take all these global ideas about what was changing and see if we could see those changes in our backyards. It's historically a very difficult thing to do. Both scientists and journalists are very hesitant to point to any one, you know, weather phenomenon and say, this is climate change. But by not doing it, by not going into those spaces where scientists and journalists have been historically uncomfortable going, the American people really are confused about whether or not they're being affected by climate change every day. And that's the most important kind of idea that we were trying to focus on is like, is climate change happening to us? And if it is, how is it changing us? And 2012 was this very unusual window in which we saw what the future could be like, because scientists are still arguing back and forth whether or not what we saw in 2012 was the result of climate change. And no matter what they decide, 2012, which was, you know, the warmest year in the contiguous United States, also the longest 18 months of consecutive warm months, is our window to the future. It's an opportunity for us to say, okay, if this isn't climate change, this is what climate change is going to be like. So we were just documenting what people were seeing change and then connecting them to scientists to see if those changes actually were climate change. We were having conversations with people and, you know, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. We had no idea that 2012 would be the epic year that it was in terms of extreme weather in Western Colorado and across the country.
So what is it you think? You've been doing these stories, and I'm curious what it is that you think came out of it for you in terms of why both people who are studying climate, who address it on a state level especially, and a national level, and why we ourselves, when we see what happens in our backyards, to our crops, to the water. There was one piece in there where you talked to a farmer who got furious with you because you were one of those crunchy granola people trying to tell a story about the environment and messing up his life. Why do you think we are so reluctant to want to deal with what's in our face?
Well, I can say that I'm still investigating that question, it's one of the most fascinating things I've ever worked on. I will say that about a year ago, before this project, I was living in DC, and my ideas about why the United States still hasn't bought into climate change were very different. What I learned being in Western Colorado, working with farmers and ranchers, was that the people who don't necessarily believe in climate change are not dumb. They're really, really smart, and they have really, really smart questions. Farmers and ranchers are working in living experiments. Every farm and every ranch is engrossed in science much more than I ever was studying climate change or reporting on climate change in Washington, D.C. We've just never really engaged with them in a nuanced way. We've never really addressed the complications of what climate change means for our country. And in a very we've never sat down at the table and had a real conversation. And so that was what we did. We spoke with ranchers and farmers who say, look, the world has always been changing. The earth has always been changing. Scientists and journalists would say the same thing. What's different now is that it's changing at a much quicker rate. The changes are more extreme. And we're trying to tease out how we can, you know, differentiate between natural variation and climate change. And that's what the story with Nolan ended up being about.
And I heard what you just said, but I'm just curious because I hear this all the time in our discussions and hear what people have to say. Is it that, like, when you interview people like Nolan Duskin?
Yes.
And we're going to play a little piece about that here in a minute to talk about that. But he apparently believes what he won't talk about.
Yes, he does believe in climate change for sure. And he does talk about it. It's just when he talks about it with his constituency, the people that he is charged with providing reliable information about water and weather and climate, he has historically felt that by bringing up climate change, he undermines his own trust that the community places in him to be a reliable source of information. It's a very delicate relationship that he's been navigating, but he is an incredible source of information for the entire state. He has his own citizen science project running in the state called Coco Roz. He does all these outward things that are all about, you know, protecting the state and informing the state about extreme variation and climate. And yet when faced with this particular sector, he's historically not felt comfortable talking about climate change.
And then that is the part. Well, let's play this little clip, that another piece from your wonderful story that was on This American Life that kind of addresses this a little bit. Ready?
Nolan's the person Colorado farmers and ranchers turn to, the one they trust, to tell them what the weather has done, what it is doing, and what it will do. That's been his job for 36 years. Now that he was seeing cause for alarm, would he tell people that? In reporting on climate change, I found that scientists don't always level with people that way. I've interviewed three different scientists who are already preparing for the worst. They've bought second homes high above sea level. They'll confess stuff like this to me in private, but never to the public. And sure, it's not scientific information, but it's telling. Saying emphatically, this is what the climate models predict for your land and your livelihood, that's information people would probably take seriously as they decide their own long-term plans. So would Nolan start telling people, I believe 2012 is a sign of where Colorado is headed with climate change, and we're in trouble.
So, and we're in trouble.
looks like we're in trouble. So, a little bit.
So, I mean, that to me is the crux of it. Do you think that we are in denial because of how it will affect our lives if we begin to admit to ourselves there's something drastically wrong, and that some scientists are difficult because they don't want to talk about it because they're fearful of their jobs or of their effectiveness? I mean, because we seems to be we're at a time where we have to be, you know, honest about what's going on around us.
Yes, no, I think climate change is one of these unique situations where, you know, by identifying an enemy as, you know, there was another story called, you know, pick, you know, call out your enemy. we inherently are pointing at ourselves in terms of our usage of resources and energy resources, which isn't really a productive way to go forward. So in some respects, it's a question of our lifestyle, questioning our lifestyle and our use of resources, which people find inherently scary. Also dealing with religion. I found some really, really smart ranchers and farmers who say, you know, pay attention to change, know that there's things changing. But when, you know, when I ask them, you know, is this climate change? They say, well, oh, God's in charge. And I never really had a good answer for that. It was a really difficult thing to take the conversation forward from that point. And I would ask people like Pat Polson, who's not in this American Life story, but is another story that we did. She's a rancher, coal miner, saw incredible changes that were right on par with what scientists were seeing this year. Her entire family's in coal mining, and her church, they had a sign outside that said, you know, pray for rain, thanks Lord for the moisture. And I said, well, are they talking about climate change in church? And they said, no. So God is always part of the conversation when it comes to why, you know, why aren't we dealing with climate change? Also, politics. Unfortunately, I think the conversations that we had in Colorado were able to get around politics, but politics continue to be the kind of the banner that people will fly. Like, if you're a Republican, then you don't believe in climate change. That, again, was addressed in the This American Life story after mine. That's really getting us nowhere. So it's an incredibly complex conversation, and yet the most important conversation to have in the 21st century. This is going to change every detail about our lives, not just about droughts and extreme weathers, but little things like air travel, the availability of coffee, the things that we love and take for granted every day will be changing. And we're just really not comfortable talking about it.
No, we're not. I'm glad you are forcing the issue for us to talk about that. Julia Kumari-Dropkin, we'll be looking at her work, lead producer for IC Change, a public media experiment in community environmental science reporting, taking place at KVNF Public Radio in Colorado. Our sister station we've done some work with in the past. She produced this piece called The CO2 in CO for This American Life, and we'll be linking to that whole story and to her work and KVNF's work as well. And Julia, welcome. I mean, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate
Take care.
It.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break.